Listener warning, everything about this podcast is offensive and often stupid. Of the Twin Towers of Guys, Games, and Beer. It's the Guys, Games, and Beer podcast.
Woo! Yeah! Woo!
Woo! Today
we have a special guest, don't we, Rob?
That is true, and my special guest is
me.
Okay,
can you be a little more specific, me?
Not to be mistaken with Kevin the pervert.
No, I'm definitely not Kevin the pervert.
Okay, this is.
I'm not that.
He is the other Kevin.
All right.
He is.
So introduce yourself.
Kevin from Dragon Slumber Games.
All right. So, yeah, my name is Kevin Jaguerre. I'm a French-Canadian, as you might have heard from my accent. And I'm the developer of the solo developer of Aerolite Core, a JRPG in the style of traditional games, more of the SNES style, but with more modern graphics.
Cool.
All right. Well, before we wait. Before we talk to Kevin about,
we will go elbows deep into that.
Yes. Before we go elbows deep into Kevin, we will go. We will talk about
freezing. Freezing. There's a comma in there someplace.
What show beer we have tonight? So we are trying another beer out of Atlanta, or out of the South today. This is called Emergency Drinking Beer by Wild Heaven Craft Beers.
So when the zombie breakout happens, you crack one of these.
You know, it does come in this cool yellow and black printed can that really
very
does have
simplistic,
a very emergency
government
feel
grade
to
labeling.
It.
I love it. It's right. Hilarious.
So let's start. Okay, let me the description of this particular beer. Oh.
All-purpose blend.
Was
whoa, dude, they've got this in multiple languages.
Yeah. That too, which is amazing because it's only sold like in Atlanta, from what I can find out.
Well, it's a multicultural city, you know?
Well, it is. So, but it's a Pils.
Yes, there's rednecks and farmers.
It's a Pils, and as they said, with a citrus flavor and Portuguese sea salt. And lemongrass.
It was called a session beer.
Which means we want the damn royalties. Every time you guys use the name session beer, you need to be paying Guys, Games, and Beer royalties. Because we call them session beers long before. Yes, I did say Portuguese sea salt and lemongrass.
Right. So this is hipster?
Hipster beer.
Oh,
I'm a little side of
hipster beer.
What? Now, what sea do the Portuguese have?
No. I just spoiler alert, no.
Oh. Oh God, no!
yeah.
No. Tastes like hairspray.
I think if you would have told me that there was sea salt in this, I would have tasted a little better. But
you can taste the sea salt though, and you know what's not good? Salted beer.
You know what? I had a beer like this.
It tastes like something you buy at Bath
& Body Works. I think I can sum up. I had a beer very similar to this, and I think I really can nail what this tastes like.
Even though
rubber tires.
Wow. Okay. So. When they say emergency drinking beer, that means after the zombie apocalypse, if you can't find anything freaking else, you could drink this, maybe.
Like, this
not even worth it. Not even during an emergency.
I think we need to make this the other six of them that you have.
Well,
those need to be penalty beers.
Let's put this thing to a vote.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
Okay, that is the... Wait, you did? Okay, all right, yeah. Unanimously down. I am sorry, New Haven, craft.
And by the way,
I'd rather
not
drink whatever
session beer because you'd have to be able to drink more than one.
Zing! Oh, you God, lie. that is horrible.
You just look at it and you go, you like
it. I have to finish it?
No, you don't. No, nobody has to finish that beer. Oh my God.
Wow, alcohol abuse.
No.
The first thing on Guys, Games, and Beer.
It's only alcohol abuse if it actually tastes like alcohol.
Can I get a beer, please? That you're getting?
Yeah, can I get like a Heineken to wash this?
And we drink like everything.
Yeah, this is something. I am drunk.
All right, you know what?
Rubbing alcohol run through a sock.
Yeah, you might just want to bring like a whole bunch of beers, Tom.
You know what I think the best thing is if we just move on.
We can wash it down.
Well, let's move on to something.
Let's just move on to something
much
good.
Better.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's get. We're gonna get thirsty about JRPGs right now.
Yes. Yeah. Let's
do that.
Oh. Yeah, that sounds like a better choice.
Wow. I'm gonna finish this to nail down exactly what it tastes like.
Oh, good luck with that.
All right, so Arlite Core.
Maybe we can try it into
Let's start talking.
Yeah. All right. Okay, so we got a little bit of taste of it. You have the alpha downloadable on your site. It's available for people to kind of try out. What was the general inspiration, and how did you kind of start working on this project?
Well, my goal was I really wanted to make a JRPG in the old traditional style, like the SNES era, like Final Fantasy VI and Chrono Trigger. And for me, what those games meant were just to have a really in-depth story, really a lot of time spent developing characters and just having a more cinematic presentation. And that's a bit of what I wanted to bring with Arlite Core, because I felt like a lot of games were... had a very limited scope in general. A lot of indie JRPGs had a very limited scope, so I wanted to broaden the scope with my game. And beyond the story, I really wanted to just have a bit of evolution when it came to the fighting system as well. I didn't want it to just be spamming the attack button. I wanted to have some strategy with the having to use the defense system. I added a combo system. I removed magic in favor of a super meter instead. So I really wanted to just take the basic traditional JRPG model and just make it my own, basically.
You know, we kind of had this a little bit of this debate earlier, or a little bit of discussion. What would you say makes a JRPG?
I think a lot of, for me personally, it really is the story and the presentation of the story that makes a JRPG. I think, especially when it came to old games, a lot of JRPGs had just a lot of battles and a lot of grinding. And you really had to spend a lot of time just building your character to be able to move on to the next section of the game. But that never was what I loved about JRPGs. What I loved was the story, was the time spent with those characters and how they each had their own personality inside the story, but also in battle. I mentioned Final Fantasy VI, where, for instance, Cyan has his sword tech moves, which are very unique to himself and is a mechanic that's just him that can perform. And that's kind of what I love about JRPGs. It's just how every game is very different from one another. There are a plethora of possible mechanics that can be brought forth, and it's a great genre, and it's still a genre that's been around for a long time, but still has a lot to give, I think.
From playing the alpha, yeah, I got a really good sense of that. It was the good thing about JRPGs is, like, if you've played a couple, you really don't need a whole lot of introduction. You can kind of figure out the basics yourself, and then when you start discovering some of the intricacies, like, when I was, like, comboing attacks and things like that, you could get, like, multiple hits with some character's abilities, or the parrying and everything like that. You kind of, like, it was stuff that, like, I could figure out on my own without much of a tutorial, which I thought was really cool. And it felt a little different combat-wise, which I kind of liked a lot for sure.
I found today that it's a good lunchtime game.
Yeah.
No, that was me, too. I just kind of sit down during my lunch.
Well, to be honest, I totally went the totally opposite way.
And we can play that on lunchtime. So.
I went totally the opposite way of Travis. I was the one guy that kept on spamming attack, and I went, like, full frontal assault. And I dominated. Don't get me wrong. I killed it, you know?
And I played both ways, and yes, even, and you're right, you don't have to necessarily you can just straight out attack.
Well, I have a feeling further down the line that's
well, yeah. Let's ask our guests that. Do you so? Some of us used some of those other elements like parry and that, and some just went with straight attack. Does that become more important later on when you if you get further past like the demo that we had?
Yeah, absolutely. And even beyond that, I'd say that just even for the demo that you had, a lot of it was me testing out the balancing and figuring out what people were doing with the system and trying to tweak enemies with the feedback that I'm getting. So I really want to enforce the all of the mechanics in the game. But absolutely, when you go further in the game with the tougher enemies, you know, at some point it just becomes you need to deal damage and just attacking won't be enough. You really have to work on stunning the enemy and once the status effects come into play, that becomes another. You know, it's a traditional game mechanic for JRPGs, but it does change the game and the way you have to approach it.
Well, to be honest, I did level up my characters a little bit more, and I grinded a little bit with going on the Outer World, and yeah, I got to one of the status effects with the Archer. I can't really say their names without brutally murdering the names. So, but like, he's got a nice little move called Stun Arrow with his Blitz too. So yeah. I was just like, I really wanted to try it out, but
I stun people.
And yeah. Then you get the female.
Not people.
Then you get the female one that's like kind of like a healer, magic dealer kind of thing. And I was just like, all right. Well, I've definitely seen like the kind of like the broad side of the characters. You know, the main one was kind of like the tanky damage dealer while
it goes out with that hammer.
I actually love that things. I love the very satisfying
the very satisfying jumping up in the air and smashing the monster's face to the ground. As always, I was just like, all right, this is satisfying right now. Especially when you're dealing like during that I was like dealing around like 500 damage to like the last monster.
So yeah, deciding, okay, this is a project you've been working on by yourself. Like, what kind of stemmed the inspiration to start making it a game? Is it, like, a story you had in your head that you're like, oh, this would play well as an RPG? Or is it like, you were interested in building an RPG and kind of came out with a storyline to build around that? How did it come to be?
Well, I knew that I wanted to make a JRPG, and basically I looked at a lot of JRPG tropes, and I tried to avoid them as much as possible. That's kind of why I have a blacksmith as a hero.
Thank you. I was wondering about that.
Yeah. I wanted to ask I
didn't
want to
have a soldier as a hero. I didn't want to have a young amnesiac soldier, and I just wanted to avoid all of those tropes.
And no one woke up in bed.
Wow, you're so
exactly.
You're so cliche if you pick it.
Well, no, that was a very good point because it's like a blacksmith. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I was like, I'm a blacksmith. All right, cool.
And a master blacksmith.
No, yeah, you're not correct. You're not a master.
You're going
yet.
To. You are already like the assumed
right, master. The chosen one.
Right. But you just gotta search the world. And so you aren't even to the point of having to save the world. Which, you know, most of them are like, all right, now I got to save the world.
Right. You just got to get a better blacksmith.
You're just trying to be a better blacksmith.
No, and I liked
and
that.
Along
I
the
thought
way,
that was a really good...
Something bad happened.
A good storyline to do.
Well, no, what happened... You have that, like, art light right there, the metal that you want to make, like, one of the most powerful
weapons. The best
weapons.
Best
weapons with, and then it gets stolen by the jackass.
And then he calls it crap.
Yeah, he said it was a trinket.
Yeah, and again, this is something you've already said. One thing that really stood out to me, I really liked, was the monster art style. It was not your stereotypical fantasy stuff. It had some inspiration from that. I really liked, like, the mantis. I forget what the name of those little cute animals were that kind of turned terrifying.
Oh, yeah, the
plums. I thought those were...
plums, I think they're called, or something.
Very, very interesting monsters. Like, where did you kind of get inspiration for those?
Well, actually, I worked a lot with my monster artist. When the project started, since I was a single dev, I was looking out for what I could do with the monsters, and this artist, Nerissa Dyson, came along, and she did the amazing art that you.
Drunken Difficulties, Guys, Games, and Beer will be right back.
Yeah. So do I start now?
Yep. Yeah, please.
You can start, yeah. All right.
So yeah, I was working with this artist, Nerissa Dyson, and she's the one who brought animated monsters to the project, since originally they were going to be static monsters. And wow. Just making the visual style and the type of monsters that we can see, it was pretty much a collaboration between her and me. For the boss that you fight in the alpha, that's on her. Amazing job with that.
That was a really cool
game. And it's really interesting, since originally that was just going to be used as a single boss at that point. But I think the monster is so amazing that I started using it elsewhere in the game to just punctuate other scenes.
Yeah, she did an amazing job. Art style wise, that really, we were talking about this earlier.
Yeah,
it has a very
The Windows 95 art style done correctly.
Yeah,
it's you know, and that's you know, I kind of wanted to ask you about this, that it seems to me, okay, there's a lot of retro 8-bit, 16-bit style games out there right now, but this has got that art style of the 16-bit. But it's a higher quality art.
Yeah, but it has that 16-bit feel, though.
But it still has a higher quality.
Yes. I mean,
the resolution is much
higher.
Well,
of course it's much higher.
But not a lot of the games are doing that. They're 16-bit.
And looking like 16-bit. Yeah.
And they look like 16-bit. So what led the decision to go ahead and make it a... You know, you're doing sort of a 16-bit style game.
It'd be 16. That's all 16.
Is it like?
Yeah, probably 16.
It's 16.
16-bit.
But it's not like classic 16-bit.
No, it's
more
not like classic.
But you went with a much higher graphics level. What was the thought there?
I always knew that I wanted to make higher resolution graphics, because like you're saying, there are so many indie JRPGs which take the 8-bit, the 16-bit style, but the very original style, and it's something I wanted to get away from, just to have a different style, to give a different identity to Airlight Core. I was really lucky because, like I mentioned, I'm not doing any of the art. I had to hire artists to make all of the art in the game. There are about 20 artists who worked on the game.
Whoa!
Yeah, that's a lot.
Okay.
Some of them worked for a few weeks. Some of them have been on the project for years. It takes a lot of people to make something on this of this scope, and I think that's kind of one place where I've been lucky to be able to manage a project of this scope. I think a lot of indie devs have to do with more limited options, and they do the best that they can with the those kinds of situations.
Well, I you know, just for me, I thought visually it was beautiful. It's a beautiful looking game.
Yeah.
It looks, it looks better when moving, I think, actually on the screen than it does in screenshots. I don't think screenshots tend to do it justice, really, for the visual style.
Not really. No,
yeah.
For
it's kind of weird. It's one of those games where I was wondering about the visual style until I ran it. And then you actually play it, and the visual style looks way better. And I've seen a couple games like that where there's
the
just something in the animation that really brings it out.
Thank you, exactly. If in the fight scenes, you know, if you looked at that as a static shot, it's just going to look like a 16-bit game. But when you see things moving around, jumping, you know, the float off, exactly. There's a smoothness to it. The, you know, when the slash attack happens or the bite attack happens, and you'll see that little icon appear for it, really adds a lot to that particular battle section. Okay.
So, but now to that, then that's probably more engine work than artist work.
And I was just going to ask about the engine. So this is not a standard build game. What are you using as your engine?
I am using my own engine. I programmed the engine entirely by myself. I started in 2012. Actually, the project started as me building an engine, a JRPG engine, because I didn't want to use RPG Maker to make a... I didn't want to have the RPG
there it is. There's the RPG.
We just, I'm sorry, we had a big discussion about this, how bad it is, because there are just so many games. Like you said, there are so many of the RPG games coming out because of RPG Maker.
I do not hate that engine. I don't hate it. The problem is that people use it to make shortcuts. You can make a great game with it. Don't get me wrong. But most people don't. They just cookie cutter.
Well, now to that, since you created your own engine, is there any thought of releasing the engine? Like,
let him get the game out first.
Well, this is sort of an example. It sort of becomes a running example of how great the engine can work.
That's true.
And and you could then release the engine. I'm just throwing things out here.
Yeah.
Honestly, I wouldn't be opposed to releasing the engine eventually. It's been a very long development cycle, and I wouldn't say that the engine is the best coded engine out there. So there are a lot of dirty shortcuts in the programming.
It happens. It really happens. Yeah. We've all taken shortcuts.
Oh, hell yes.
The development tools that I use daily for map making, for instance, are absolutely terrible. They look absolute. It's all programmer art. I never put any effort into it because I was the only one using it. So it's definitely not consumer friendly, but I wouldn't be opposed to releasing it to the people if they were interested in seeing how I approach it.
Alright,
well, and one thing I know about JRPGs is always the exploration and stuff like that, going to different places, finding secrets and stuff like that. It's like, what are you planning to, like, what are your thoughts of, like, adding, like, different kind of, like, things, like blueprints for, like, different weapons to make, like, even better weapons, like combining, like, because you go to different towns and learn from different blacksmiths. It's like, what are you planning to do?
Saw on the site there was stuff about stances. Could you go a little more detail about that?
Yeah, well, just to start about the collectibles. For the collectibles themselves, I do have a lot of stuff planned. There aren't any in the alpha itself, but there are dragon plushies to be found scattered across the world in dungeons. And when you gather all of them, you can unlock a secret room, which I'll leave for the people to discover.
Plushie room! Oh, God, no.
Yeah,
oh,
and I also have a few side quests along the way. A lot of figuring out what to bring to what people and which will yield better weapons. And like you mentioned, since the main character is a blacksmith, there are metals to be found in the world.
Yeah.
And the metals are in limited supplies, so when you're forging a weapon, you have to make choices as to what you're going to forge. Are you going to forge a better hammer for Cardin, or does Beam need a better armor? And I want to bring options into the fray.
I really noticed that, like, there was things that when you go to a shop, basically if you have gold, you could, like, buy anything you want. But in this game, there were elements that you could buy, just like, okay, you can just buy those with karma. Which is the currency. There was also things where you could craft them
with iron and
aluminum, but you could only get those items by crafting. You couldn't just purchase your way to
you had to make them. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. You have to make them, and the weapons that you forge are always better than the one you can buy.
Huh.
So it's always advantageous to buy stuff, but you can't forge everything because you can't just grind for iron. For instance, you'll find one piece of iron, and you can use it or lose it. Basically,
pro tip.
When
you forge weapons, sometimes you'll even forge a master weapon, so that adds even more variety of things to discover.
Well, there's a little secret about the game already. Yeah.
I, I think overall the game has about 500 weapons.
Oh, wow.
it's a lot of weapons because it's pretty tough to balance out, but I'm putting a lot of time into making them feel interesting.
Well, good. That's awesome. You said there's choices on making weapons. Like, is there going to be, like, choices within the story that you have to make at all? Because that'd be quite interesting to put in.
Well, it'll be more like if you follow certain side quests, you can find pieces of ore or different jewels which you can use with new weapons, which you couldn't otherwise forge because you didn't have access to them. Mm. There are always new things to discover, though. I put a lot of time into just making...
Listener warning!
Whoa, what the heck?
That was me!
All right, nice job there, Rob. Go ahead, continue,
so,
Kevin.
I gotta tell you, I actually really stoked. After playing the demo, I got really stoked about this game. Where is it in the development cycle? The full version available or going to be available soon?
Or at least up to beta?
Now, you already got greenlighted on Steam.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's already
You got greenlighted really quick on Steam. Holy crap.
Yeah,
last
year, and I did expect to release the game last year, but I ran into some delays, and right now I'm aiming for a fall of this year release. There are still a lot of work to be done. I'm still working with the artist. I'm working with the guy who's making the music, who is making it an absolutely amazing soundtrack for the game, a unique soundtrack with over about 25 themes, I'm about 60% done with the game, and a lot of the big work is already done. Right now it's more about integrating the things that the artist has made into the game and just polishing the various storylines.
All right. Well, okay, so if people want to find out more about your game, where should they go to check it out?
So they should go to arelightcore.com. That's arelightcore.com. And from there, they'll have access to my Facebook, my Twitter, and they can, like you mentioned, they can download the alpha directly from there and just check out the trailer.
You know what? That's really cool that you released the alpha so that people can actually try it. Like, yep. When it comes to developers, like games that we play, we have to, like, they give us like a beta or something like that. This one,
right?
Just like, so, I'm still working on it.
So I'm going to strongly suggest to our listeners, go check out the alpha. It is really... The alpha has a lot of good gameplay in it already. It's a really good chance to try it out. And, again, you get a chance to give Kevin some feedback on what you'd like to see in the game. All right, so, and you're looking for a fall release on this.
Yeah.
It's going to be available on Steam and I assume some other outlets as well in the fall. We will have links on our website to your website and to other social media for you.
And Tom has actually done his job, so it's time for the 5-minute break.
So we are going to take a 5-minute break. We are going to try to get the taste of that emergency drinking beer out of our mouths.
It's plastic hose. That's what it tastes
I'm
like.
Almost
it's
done
plastic
with mine.
Hose.
You actually drank that, Larry?
I'm working on it.
For the love of God.
You're still working.
Halfway through it.
Kevin, are you going to Kevin, are you going to stick around for the second half of the show?
He wants to.
Absolutely.
All right, sounds good, Kevin. So we're going to take a 5-minute break.
And we'll be right back for you. It'll only be a minute after these commercial messages.
What up, nerds? I'm Noob, and you're watching G2B.
And we're back with the podcast that never sleeps, though we wish we would. It's Guys, Games, and Beer.
Yeah! And I want to say, I finished our show beer.
I'm still working on mine.
That's why I would have that red.
Oh, I would use anything to take the taste of that show beer out of my...
No,
not everything.
You know what?
I figured it out. In this case, is red.
It is, a session beer. Because it lasted through my Pabst for a while. So it moves on. It assimilates your next drink.
I'm just saying that our tap water is probably going to taste like emergency drinking beer for the next week or so.
God,
I've been dumping a lot of that into Lake Michigan. All
right, so.
So we got to be doing something else.
Rob, what is the second topic tonight?
We are going to talk about jerpages. What?
Jerpages?
Jerpages.
Jerpages.
Jesus's. What's the 16-bit era, the high point of the JRPG?
All right, well, who wants to...
Is it all downhill from here?
Who wants to start with that one? Actually, let's let our guest. So, do you think that the 16-bit And are we okay? 16-bit console era. Let's kind of narrow that down, because really, when it comes
no,
we don't. It's a 16-bit
platform
era.
I want to know
the high point for it. Or
well, PCs did spend a lot of time in 16-bit.
They did, but yeah. But I can't.
There might have even been a few Amigas. Games that were.
There were a few, and we might talk about those as well. So let's talk about this. Is it the 8-bit era, the 16-bit era, or beyond that really was the high point of JRPGs, or that particular style of game? All right, so let's let our guest Kevin start with this. Kevin, what do you think?
I think the 16-bit era, the SNES 16-bit era, was definitely one of the, was the high point for the JRPG era. I think when the JRPG started in the 8-bit, they were trying a lot of stuff out. They were testing the ground, seeing what works and doesn't work. We can talk about Dragon Quest, which started with a lot of grinding but very little story. Final Fantasy, which did have more story but still was kind of flat. And as the years went on, they made better and better game. And I think when it came to the SNES era, they had so many more opportunities just overall. Not only the graphics were better, but just they had bigger story potentials for story presentations, and they had a lot of gameplay elements which were really interesting.
So you know, that kind of brings up a point that I played a few games that were kind of early in the and they were RPGs, but they didn't have a battery to save, and so they used codes.
Which that's 8-bit. Right?
That's the 8-bit era.
The 8-bit one.
They used codes to like come back to the same sort of location in time.
That'd be like the 24 code that
and,
you get.
And I found that just abhorrent.
Well,
they might have been cheap RPGs though, because Dragon Quest and Final Fantasy both had battery packs.
Yeah, but that was in the 16-bit era.
Those were 8-bit era. The one I'm thinking of, and I don't remember the game, so you're gonna catch me off guard there, but I remember playing a Genesis RPG that utilized a code-based save system.
But a lot of games in the 8-bit era did.
But that was a 16-bit game system.
But that was on the Genesis, and it really doesn't count for that.
They were kind of weird because they were kind of sort of competing with 8-bit at the time in a way, you know, kind of a weird timeline.
That was the in-between era. All right, so you going with the okay, so you've mentioned the SNES for the 16-bit era.
But as far as tagging on to what he was saying, as far as experimenting, you know,
right,
how to do it.
Which, if you had to pick one SNES RPG or JRPG to play, which one?
Chrono Trigger.
Yes!
Oh!
Yes!
Oh, thank God, you chose the right one.
Wow.
There's only one checkbox here. Wait a minute.
There's other ones.
What about Final Fantasy III?
So Final Fantasy VI is an absolutely great game. I do agree. But I think that the reason why Chrono Trigger is better is because the content of Chrono Trigger is more condensed. There's always something new to do. You're always moving forward in the story. You're always discovering new things. I think the pacing of Final Fantasy VI is much slower. And it's not because of the story is slower, it's because there's a lot more traveling between distances. There's a lot less to discover.
Wait, so just in case people are fully aware, so Final Fantasy had several iterates, not all of which made it to the U.S.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
And so you're saying...
He's saying six.
Six, when... For the U.S., a lot of us knew that as 3.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and exactly. Back in the day, it was released as 3 because it was the third Final Fantasy released in America, and then Final Fantasy VII came along, and they just jumped directly to the number 7 just to keep things in line with the Japanese releases.
Like
but beyond that, when they re-released the games on the PlayStation compilations or Game Boy Advance, they kept the original Japanese numbering.
So Cryo Trigger is what? Or is that a separate Chrono line?
That's a separate. That's
they didn't freeze
yeah,
them. They went
line.
Forward in time.
That's a separate line.
Correct.
That's a totally different, like, that's not even okay. Final Fantasy, like,
at all.
Anywhere.
Different universe. All right.
So, but now you guys seem to have a little, that you were not going to say that that was the...
I don't know. There's, was it Shining Force? No. Dragon Force?
Phantasy Star?
No, not Phantasy Star.
That is one of them, though.
That, yeah. But that's another good one.
I remember there was a giant armadillo that you played with. It was kind of the...
Breath of Fire.
Breath of Fire, that was it! Way to go! Armadillo is the explanation of all I needed! Yes, Breath of Fire was an amazing one.
I was going to say Rygar.
Hey, if there's an armadillo, that narrows the scope down.
it narrowed it down, but he got it.
Yes, no, Breath of Fire, I thought, was an excellent game. And that has some really good game mechanics with, like, the dragon, of just, like, you have to combine dragons, and then you can build your dragon up. In like a fireball.
Yeah.
That's a Hard Man Canada video, by the way. Top 5 RPGs with an armadillo in them. I love that guy.
Hard Man Canada's great. Yeah.
So that's not just puffery. You actually have to deal with dragon fire. Like,
yeah. You have to deal with it. And it's nice that you have to work up to it. It's not like now you immediately have this ultimate dragon. It's like, no, you grow a dragon from a baby until it gets to
this. It's a lizard. Like, and then it becomes a little baby dragon.
It's a gecko, and then it becomes an armadillo.
A bearded dragon.
No, those are just angry. That's their last name. No, but I really enjoyed that one, and I think that one should be on the list of... No, that's a super solid one.
Of 16-bit.
Of 16-bit. So, it's really amazing.
And I believe it's the only 16-bit JRPG made by Capcom, actually.
Oh, it was a Capcom game?
Yep. Breath of Fire 1 and 2. The first one was released in America by Square, but it was developed by Capcom. And the second one was released by Capcom as well.
Well, so where's the challenge here? Were there any, let's say, PlayStation 1 JRPGs that might be in competition?
Final Fantasy VII.
That is nice, that question.
Nice,
yes.
And stereo.
You know what?
Chrono Cross.
Is also Suikoden.
Yeah, exactly. Chrono
which
Cross.
One, Kevin, which one did you mention?
Suikoden.
Suikoden.
I went through with that one.
Any of the Tales game? Tales of anything?
So maybe 16-bit isn't.
But then, no, that's 16-bit right. Still.
Well, here's the thing about Tales. It started back in the 16-bit era.
Crap,
and then
I didn't
worked
know
all
that
the
game
way.
Either. And it's available on PlayStation.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Tales of
32-bit, and PlayStation's 32-bit, so Final Fantasy VII.
It's 32-bit.
It's 32-bit, so that's a challenger. So,
and we can talk about modern ones, too. That's
no, but we're still trying
What's a modern one?
Well, no, okay, so wait a minute. So, let's go with you. Okay, so you've had a few experience. Would you say 16 or 32-bit for the Golden Age, or for the best? See, now Kevin thinks 16-bit.
Alright. I'm gonna have to go 16-bit too, where it's they did a lot with what they had.
Is it because they made the biggest developments during the 16-bit, or do you think the 16-bits played the best versus the 32-bit?
I don't
Final Fantasy VII.
I don't think much changed in the mechanics wise from 16 to 32.
You think
it was
all graphics?
Purely graphics. There was they had those complex systems back then.
The fighting systems, right.
The fighting systems. And Final Fantasy really hasn't changed too much when it comes.
Yeah, but
actually, it's changing a shit ton now.
The systems could have start to support RTS, so better, and so the sort of
the
starts to fall off.
The early 32-bit, I don't think did RTS well.
No, they didn't.
I don't.
Well,
you don't see a bunch of early RTS.
When I think of the 16-bit era when it comes to JRPGs. I think it was kind of like a little bit on the more of the experimental age with, like, you know, you got like Chrono Trigger and like the other Final Fantasies. Like, this is where they're kind of like experimenting, like, what can we do, what can we put in, like, what do people like and stuff like that, and they just kind of throwing like ideas out and stuff.
But I
like
have to
that.
Agree with Ben. I think it was more graphic improvements than it was any mechanics improvement. I think the mechanics didn't change
well
much.
they mastered the mechanics during that era, and then they just moved it on to the 32-bit era,
right, which only improved graphics.
Well, I would argue that the 16-bit also improved upon pacing. The way the story is paced and the way the game is paced, it was the early titles in the 8-bit era were a lot more rough than the more polished versions in the 16-bit era.
Well, that's kind of what you were talking about as far as a couple of them we mentioned earlier, like Dragon Warrior and that, where the 8-bit, where it was a lot of grinding. Yeah. And you started to lose focus on the story.
Well, you had, but there was very little story to back it up. It really was a grinding game.
I think the the 8-bit era was a little bit more influenced by Western RPGs than the 16-bit era too. I think the JRPG kind of came onto its own, as opposed to there's a lot of similarities to earlier 8-bit works like Ultima in those games. Whereas by the 16-bit era, they really started to. They started to come onto their own.
Well, then you come up with like 32-bit era, and then you get like Persona too, like games like that, which are like
Persona's freaking epic.
Yeah, exactly, and that was a 32-bit era game.
yes, Mr. Hands up.
Yeah, why don't you put your hands up? Really,
I'm putting my hands up because I'm gonna ask a really dumb question.
Yay!
How are you defining JRPG versus RPG? Like, what makes it a JRPG?
Yeah, I tried that in the first half.
Yeah, we had a hard time with this.
Okay.
Okay, so let me give you my definition. I really think it has to do with style. What do you mean style?
An anime style?
Not just
manga style?
Not just anime. The graphics tend to lean a little more towards the Japanese style graphics.
Okay.
And I think it always is a top-down type move around game. That being said, a lot of those games, they're not. So some of the early
Final Fantasy VII.
Let me go back to 8-bit first. Wait, let me go back to 8-bit. Some of the RPGs were isometric views.
So early
8-bit, you had a lot of isometric views. The Japanese tended to go for that top-down 2D, where you didn't have the isometric. And I think that's part of the difference that you see with the Japanese games. And again, I think the artistic style in the Japanese games is different. Now, that's my definition.
Okay. Well, then I'm going to ask about Final Fantasy XV. Is that a JRPG?
I don't even consider it an RPG.
Oh, yeah, that is completely different style. You know what?
Now, again, is that really an RPG at that point?
I think it's an RPG. Yeah, it's still,
Is it a role-playing game?
Here's the thing, though. Like, they actually took, pretty much, like, since Square Enix owned Kingdom Hearts, I think they kind of brought in the Kingdom Hearts mechanic where you can actually free roam instead of just...
Right,
stand
along
there,
this path, right.
Stand well, there and attack. Fucking move and you're like,
so
I'm going to
get
you.
Is that a big difference? Is that you're part of a storyline that's sort of...
Fixed.
Sort of rail. You know, whereas Kingdom Hearts or
that was railed with some like
a little bit, but then you start getting into like a Skyrim or something,
right?
Like that,
completely
like,
unreal.
Where it's just
you're just exploring a world.
But
I just want to be a blacksmith the whole time. You can be a blacksmith.
See, that's
the whole
so many
time.
That's what I would think was more like, you know, just exploring, doing just random people. Would be more Western,
right? Versus
like just a streamline kind of like when it comes to JRPGs, it's kind of like streamlined. Like you could do other
stuff, but other games,
this is a major thing that
I
you want to do.
That, I don't think that's strictly what made him a JRPG.
I think it's part of it, though, that a JRPG has a more linear experience as opposed to a Western RPG, even like Ultima, which is more open. You can really go anywhere you want and just do whatever you want.
Huh?
And figure out what you want to do.
I think if you get attacked by the grass, it's a Western RPG.
In Ultima, you can get attacked by the floor.
Yeah, exactly. So, yes.
No, I think that. I think it's more like reading a book. You know, when you do a JRPG as opposed to a choose-your-own-adventure.
Yeah. Which is more like an RPG.
Yeah, which is
a
more like
Western RPG.
Western RPG. I think that's
Which would come down to, like, you know, the Fallout 4 and stuff like that and everything else.
Well, yeah, pretty much all of those. I mean,
a whoop-rug.
A what?
A whoop-rug.
A whoop-rug. As opposed to a jerping.
And I think part of the reason, it may be technological, that part of the reason that the 16-bit really had a high point with JRPG is that you were able to do the graphics that were good, that were enjoyable. You were able to tell a long story format. You were able to have the mechanics to have an intricate combat system. But what a 16-bit system probably couldn't do is a free open world in the same sort of sense that a Skyrim or something like that could do, where it would be able to tie things back and stuff.
That's when you come down,
I think there's probably
Final
some
Fantasy
limitations in what it was able to do.
I don't think from a programming standpoint there was. I really don't. I think you could have done a free roaming RPG on
even Chrono Trigger was a little free roaming.
I think
roaming. Probably
because they were so story driven, it's harder to go out of order.
Right, and that's more. I think
we're like Ultima.
It wasn't story. There was no. There was a backstory.
There was a pretty good story, but it unlocked areas to actually bring you further in the story, and you could wander around. Yeah.
Where you're right. I think the JRPGs are definitely very linear, very story driven.
So Dragon Age, JRPG.
Western.
There's side quests on it, but it's very linear in its actual storyline. Well, that's interesting.
Was it made by a Western company?
It's
Western!
No.
I think it probably is.
Wow, that's a very good question.
Yeah, I think it was a Western
company. Well, let's throw it to our guest. Dragon Age.
So, I've never played Dragon Age, so I can't be a part of this conversation.
I gotta tell you, Dragon Age
is also,
it is an
personal
awesome
one. No. Don't even start me on it.
This is so awesome.
No, it's not.
Baldur's Gate. Yeah, so that's why I avoided Dragon Age.
No, it's not. Dragon Age is not.
Okay,
that
so Baldur's
Baldur's Gate is. Oh, see.
Is a West. Now, that's a Western RPG, though. Because, again, that's one where, again, it's very open. There's no really linear storyline that you're following.
Dragon Age is very.
I like that. I think that's a good definition, actually, for a JRPG.
Champions of Norath, too, you know. Those games.
I mean, you may end up at the same point at the end of the game.
But there's not much to a story. But you can go any way to get there.
You always have to have a critical path.
Right.
You always have to have a critical path. Or what do you have, right? And, there is an actual story to Dragon Age. Whereas, I don't know, it's a little weaker with Baldur's Gate.
Oh my god, Dragon Age story was so weak.
But again, this is just what we're talking about. Western RPGs tend to be less story-driven.
I'm a JRPG fan, man. Like, I've been...
I played the Final Fantasy. I played the Tales. I played the Persona. I love that. I guess
you're right. 16-bit is where it's at.
Yeah, because those were the story-driven ones.
I not only would say that 16-bit was the height of the JRPG, I would say that it's probably one of the best years for the Western
I want to find a game that I could get lost in and actually make a connection to characters. Not just like, okay. And that's what I feel like when I played Dragon.
What about Skyrim? What about Skyrim? What about Skyrim?
Skyrim, that was...
I think you can make a good connection to your characters.
Who did you sleep with in Dragon Age?
Morgan.
You made a connection.
And you remember who he slept with. But he remembers who he slept with.
Yeah,
and we found out that Larry has loose morals.
Yeah.
And he slept with everybody in Dragon Age.
Larry slept with the dog.
Yeah, like Gross Point Blank. What? If I was in the army, they'd found a career
That's mainly so that I could save my character and kill the fucking dragon at the end, which is a shitty boss character, by the way.
Dragons are shitty boss characters.
Dragons in it?
What?
That was the worst dragon I ever fought.
So the general consensus, guys, 16-bit the era?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was more like the experimental area, and then it was a good starting point. It was a great starting point.
They didn't refine it; they built it there, but they built a great system.
They could do,
and then they just kind of tweaked it and refined it as the bits doubled.
And they're still doing it to the fucking today. And which I think is some of the ideas that Capcom,
besides Dragon Age, because there's a Dragon Age on the newest system.
Yeah, yeah.
What is the JRPG on a system right now, the newest gen?
The newest gen for me would probably be the Tales series. Any of the Tales. Like, there's a new one on the newest system, which is I still have not
beaten. PS4?
PS4, yeah. And I still have not beaten it, and I'm already 20 hours in, and the story's great.
Which apparently is the only system in this gen, because the Xbox One...
I wouldn't say...
Oh, ouch.
Holy mistake.
Yeah.
They're improving it. All right, I'll give them that.
There goes the Xbox One listeners. All right, so, gentlemen, let's wrap this episode up. One more time, Kevin, you are with...
Pardon?
Your company is?
Oh, Dragon's Number.
All right, and if people want to find you, your website is...
You can find me at airlightcore.com.
And we will have a link to that on our website. Kevin, we really appreciate your time this evening. Thanks for coming online.
Thanks for coming on. I really had a blast.
All right.
Thank you. And Rob has actually completed doing his job. Therefore, I will point out that you can visit us at www.guysgamesandbeer.net. You can also talk to us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/guysgamesandbeer. There are plenty of things going on there.
Like the game you gave away Monday. What a fucking... Okay, so if you are not on our Facebook page, get on the damn Facebook page. Did you see what he gave away Monday? All right, so but continue.
I gave away Ben's soul on Monday.
Yeah, you did.
I sold that years ago.
But... always free games. So yep. You really need to be on that website.
Don't forget, we are also on the Twitterers at Guys Games Beer. There's a new episode
We have a Steam group.
And we have a Steam group. I forgot all about that thing.
And we have a...
And a sister Let's Play channel. Woo! It's called Intoxicated Gaming.
And they are drunk.
Yes.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
Well, we're always drunk, so that's nothing new.
And we're edited. Ha-ha! Heck with that stuff.
Yeah, screw that editing shit. So, again, find us on the site. Make sure you check out our guests this evening. And
links, of course, on Facebook and on our website.
And on our Twitter account. And download a copy of the Alpha and make sure you give them some feedback on this.
Yep, and don't forget to give us a big ol' happy thumbs up and a
on our YouTube channel.
Yes, on our YouTube channel and on iTunes and...
everything. Tune in radio, everybody.
Ooh, and all you guys
forgot to mention the Philosopher's Stone.
Yes. And all you guys in South America, whatever the heck you're listening to, those stations are weird.
But I love them anyway.
Yeah, we love you guys anyway.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Have a good one.
Have a good evening. Bye. Bye.